ಭೂತರೆ ಸ್ವಯಂ ರೂಪ ಕದಾ ಮಧ್ಯಂ ದದಾತಿ ಸ್ವಪದಾಂತಿಕಂ ವಂದೇಹಂ ಶ್ರೀಗುರೋ ಶ್ರೀಯುತ ಪದಕಮಲಂ ಶ್ರೀಗುರುನ್ ವೈಷ್ಣವಾಂಶ್ಚ ಶ್ರೀರೂಪಂ ಸಾಗ್ರಜಾಲಂ ಸಹಗಣ ರಘುನಾಥಾನ್ವಿತಂ ತಂ ಸಜೀವಂ ಸಾರಗಂ ಸಾವಧೂತಂ ಪರಿಜನಸಹಿತಂ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಚೈತನ್ಯ ದೇವಂ ಶ್ರೀರಾಧಾ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಪಾದಾನ್ ಸಹಗಣ ಲಲಿತ ಶ್ರೀ ವಿಶಾಖಾನ್ವಿತಾಂಶ್ಚ ಹೇ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಕರುಣಾ ಸಿಂಧೋ ದೀನಬಂಧೋ ಜಗತ್ಪತೆ ಗೋಪೇಶ ಗೋಪಿಕಾ ಕಾಂತ ರಾಧಾಕಾಂತ ನಮೋಸ್ತುತೆ ತಪ್ತಕಾಂಚನ ಗೌರಾಂಗೀ ರಾಧೇ ವೃಂದಾವನೇಶ್ವರೀ ವೃಷಭಾನುಸುತೆ ದೇವಿ ಪ್ರಣಮಾಮಿ ಹರಿಪ್ರಿಯೇ ಪಂಚಕಲ್ಪತರುಭ್ಯಶ್ಚ ಕೃಪಾ ಸಿಂಧುಭ್ಯೇವ ಚ ಪತಿತಾನಾಂ ಪಾವನೇಭ್ಯೋ ವೈಷ್ಣವೇಭ್ಯೋ ನಮೋ ನಮಃ ಜಯ ಶ್ರೀ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಚೈತನ್ಯ ಪ್ರಭು ನಿತ್ಯಾನಂದ ಶ್ರೀ ಅದ್ವೈತ ಗದಾಧರ ಶ್ರೀವಾಸಾದಿ ಗೌರ ಭಕ್ತವೃಂದ ಹರೇ ಕೃಷ್ಣ 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 ಹರೇ 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 ರಾಮ ರಾಮ ಹರೇ ಹರೇ Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
So, welcome to lesson 4 of unit 4. Okay, which chapter of Bhagavad Gita did we cover last week?
Eighth chapter.
And we haven't actually completed the eighth chapter of Bhagavad Gita. So the last few verses are pending from 23 onwards. So beginning we will just focus on that. Then we will get into the first section of ninth chapter of Bhagavad Gita. It is again very interesting and it is the most important, we can say, the very important chapter of Bhagavad Gita. And in the 8th chapter, the beginning verses were talking about what is Brahman, what is Adhyatma, what is Adhideva, what is Adhiyajna, etc. So these questions were asked by Arjuna and now Krishna was answering all the questions. And from there onwards, it moved to a different section in the 8th chapter. What was that? After this basic questions, what was the next section of 8th chapter? Around verse number 10 onwards? Yoga Mishra Bhakti. Yoga Mishra Bhakti. It's practice and its destination is provided. And Krishna is describing Yoga Mishra Bhakti. And from there, where we move to, towards the end? A comparison between spiritual world and material world. And now, the final section is covering what is the destination of a pure devotee? Different destinations of yogis and what is the destination of a pure devotee? So that is coming to the 23rd verse. So in the 23rd verse, Krishna is telling, there are different times on which one can leave this world and different circumstances, and because of that they can get different destinations. So this is the point of discussion. So in the 23rd verse, Krishna says, O best of the Bharatas, I shall now explain to you the different times at which, passing away from this world, the yogi does or does not come back. Here, the primary discussion about yogis, one is about karma yogis and about jnana yogis. And towards the end of this section, we'll talk about a bhakti yogi, that to a pure devotee of the Lord. So here in the 24th verse, it is mentioned there is different circumstances, different timings, and at that time, if a yogi leaves this world, what are the destinations? So a yogi, you should be able to choose the time. That is a very interesting point. A yogi has to calculate what is the suitable time that he can leave this world so that he doesn't have to return to this world. And as we will be seeing in the future, how about a devotee? We can ask this question after a few verses. So here, the first verse, it is more talking about a jnani, a jnana yogi. That is verse 24. It is mentioned, Agnir Jyotir Aha Shuklaha Shan Masa Uttarayanam Tatra Prayata Gachandi Brahma Brahma Vito Janaha. So those who know the Supreme Brahman attains that Supreme by passing away from the world during the influence of the fiery god in the light at an auspicious moment of the day, during the fortnight of the waxing moon, or during the 6 months when the sun travels in the north. So these are the detailed timings when a jnana mishra, it's not a jnana mishra, a jnana yogi can attain the supreme destination of, what is the supreme destination of a jnana yogi?
Supreme.
The impersonal, not the supreme Brahman, pretty much the impersonal Brahman is there. So it is specifically pointing to a jnani who can attain the destination, and then he has to meet all these criteria, then he can go, otherwise he can't.
But Krishna Prabhu, you don't have any control for death, how can I think?
A yogi can choose his time to leave this world. So he has some control over the time when he can leave because of the practice of severe yoga system. So that's why he knows he'll be in the meditation, and when he has to leave the world through super soul, through the chakra on the forehead, he can decide when he has to leave. And accidentally, if he leaves some other time, then the destination could be different. So that's the reason they had to care about all these things. Now in the next verse, it is more of mention about a karma yogi. So that is the reason it's mentioned. Dhumo Rastris Tatha Krishnaha Shanmasa Dakshinayanam Tatra Chandramasam Jyodhar Yogi Prapya Nivartate. That is the mystic who passes away from this world during the smoke, the night, the fortnight of the waning moon, or the 6 months when the sun passes to the south, reaches the moon planet, but again come back. Okay, this is about a jnana yogi. The reason is, it's mentioned here because, a karma yogi. The reason mentioned is, whatever material attainment he can achieve, they are temporary, so they have to return to this world again. Which yogis? Jnana yogi or a karma yogi? Why can't they understand these things? Yes, it is very obvious in one sense in Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita presents truth in a very open fashion, but at the same time, depending on our consciousness, one can perceive those truths. If one's consciousness is covered, he cannot understand when something is openly presented. Even Krishna himself says, I am God, and devotional service is the supreme means to attain me, and that is the only means to attain me, even though Krishna makes it very, very clear. Still, because of contamination of the consciousness, they cannot understand. And we will understand this point in the beginning of 9th chapter. That will make it clear why a person, even though endeavoring spiritually or endeavoring in so many different ways, can't understand Krishna as the Supreme Lord. So we will get to that at the beginning of
the lecture.
Yeah, karma jnana yogis, yeah, they cannot understand that straight away.
There are so many times that there are people who leave their bodies in samadhi.
Yes.
What are they doing? Are they in jnani or?
They can be jnanis, they can be ashtanga yogis or also. And even karma yoga can lead to ashtanga yoga. Because if you remember ashtanga yoga, in the 6th chapter, there are 2 stages of ashtanga yoga. Can anyone remember which are the 2 stages of ashtanga yoga? No, what are the 2 stages
yoga
in practice?
Yoga.
Huh? Yeah, yoga rutha. Is the first stage or the second stage? Yoga rutha. Huh? No, yoga rutha is the second stage. What is the first stage of practice of ashtanga yoga? Yeah, that's right. Yoga rurukshu. Yoga rurukshu. So that is the first stage. And second stage is yoga rutha. In yoga rurukshu stage, what is the means of purification? Karma yoga. So in yoga rurukshu stage of ashtanga yoga, still one has to perform one's duty in a detached fashion. So still he acts as karma yoga. That's what I'm saying. Karma yoga can even lead to ashtanga. And in yoga rutha stage, one has to give up the work and just do the meditation.
This is yoga rutha. So that culminates after karma yoga.
If that is after yoga rurukshu stage, next stage is yoga rutha stage.
And if a person leaves his body as a jnana yogi, then he also emerges into the impersonal Brahman.
Yeah, that is the ultimate destination. A jnana yogi can achieve is merging into impersonal Brahman. So that is mentioned here.
But they don't have to obviously come back.
They don't have to obviously come back. In the sense it's a Brahman realization. It is very eternal. It's eternal in one sense, but there's a chance of falling down from impersonal realization.
So, in that case, can you give the example of the ship and the sea? Ship in the sea and the world, no way to go, so obviously it has to come back to the material world.
Yeah. Prabhu says the example of impersonal who think themselves to be liberated, but still they are forced to do philanthropic activities because they are not deriving any taste by doing the impersonal worship or impersonal meditation. So, they had to come and do some charitable hospitals, to some schools, free education, hospitals, because there is no taste in just meditating on the impersonal Brahman. Whereas devotees, we derive all the taste. So at the same time, we can help people both spiritually and materially. And in verse 27, it's very clearly mentioned, although the devotee know these 2 paths, O Arjun, they are never bewildered, therefore be always fixed in devotion. And there is a very, there is a specific reason why Krishna makes this statement, because a devotee doesn't have to worry about when he leaves the body. So we will get to that now. This purport is very nice because it's mentioned. Krishna is here advising Arjuna that he should not be disturbed by the different paths the soul can take when leaving the material world. A devotee of the Supreme Lord should not worry whether he will depart by arrangement or by accident. The word is used by arrangement or even accident. Okay. The devotee should be firmly established in Krishna consciousness and chant Hare Krishna. He should know that concern over either of these 2 paths is troublesome. The best way to be absorbed in Krishna consciousness is to be always dovetailed in his service, and he will make one's path to the spiritual kingdom safe, certain and direct. Safe, certain and direct. So Prabhupada is making, okay? So we have this 3 assurance, safe. And certainly we will reach the lines of direct path. Very obvious, it's direct. The word yoga yukta is especially significant in this verse. One who is firm in yoga is constantly engaged in Krishna consciousness in all his activities. Sri Rupa Goswami advises anasaktasya virvishyan yathartham upayunchataha. One should be unattached in material affairs and do everything in Krishna consciousness. By this system, which is called yukta vairagya, one attains perfection. Therefore, the devotee is not disturbed by these descriptions, because he knows that this his passage to the Supreme Abode is guaranteed by devotional service. That's very, very clearly mentioned. There's nothing to worry about for a devotee. So this is information sake. FYI, for your information, that's all. Mm-hmm. We don't have to worry too much. It's just for information sake. So if someone says, okay, we had to leave the world at this point of time, that point of time, etc., etc., then we should understand, no, that's not the case. But it's only one thing is, devotee has to be just engaged in the devotion service. Our activity should be dovetailed in devotion service. That is the only thing that we had to do. Even in Mahabharata, even regarding Bhishma Deva that is mentioned, right? People say, he waited for Uttarayanam. Yeah. We can see here, Shanmasam, Shanmasa, Uttarayanam. People say, Bhishma Deva waited, it was Dakshinayanam, where the sun was on the southern side, and Bhishma Deva was waiting for the sun to come to the northern side so that he can leave the world. Because he had the mystic opulence of leaving the world whenever he wants to. However, was that a reason for him to leave the world? Or was he waiting for that Uttarayanam to leave the world?
No.
No, what was the reason? Why was he waiting for? What was he waiting for? He was just waiting for only one thing. He was just waiting to see Krishna. And he wanted to leave the world while looking at the lotus face of Krishna. Same with Haridas Thakur. Haridas Thakur had only one desire. He knew Mahaprabhu could leave this world, and he couldn't bear the separation of leaving Mahaprabhu, and he wanted to leave the world in presence of Mahaprabhu. So the Lord fulfilled his devotee's desire, being present before him while Haridas Thakur was leaving the world. I think Mahaprabhu put his feet on his chest, and Haridas Thakur was looking at the lotus face of Gauranga Mahaprabhu, and at that position he chanted Gauranga and he just left the world. So this was the passage of, you know, a devotional yogi, a bhakti yogi. The Lord is right in front of him, and then he was leaving this world. And Mahaprabhu became ecstatic, and he carried the body of Haridas Thakur and he started dancing. So this is the exchange of devotion between the devotee and the Supreme Lord. So this is the highest platform of leaving the world, like Bhishma Dev, like Haridas Thakur. And even it could be some devotees leave this world by accident, as is mentioned here. Just by accident. Can be a car accident. Can be anything. Still, Krishna makes sure that he goes to the right destination. He makes the proper arrangements. Whereas for a yogi, no. No special arrangements. For a jnani, there is no special arrangement. For a karma yogi, there is no special arrangement. So a devotee, do not care. We don't have to worry about it. So that is confirmed that by performing pure devotional service, one can go back home, back to Godhead. Irrespective of the time one leaves this world, that is confirmed in 28th verse, which is the last verse of this chapter. It's a very nice verse. So we can read it together. I'll just read the first line by line. You can repeat. Vedeshu yagyeshu tapastu chaiva.
Vedeshu yagyeshu tapastu chaiva.
Daneshu yat punya phalam pradishtam.
Daneshu yat punya phalam pradishtam.
Atyerita sarvamidam viditva.
Atyerita sarvamidam viditva.
Yogi param sthanam upaiti chadyam.
Yogi param sthanam upaiti chadyam.
A person who accepts the path of devotional service is not bereft of the results derived from studying the Vedas, performing sacrifices, undergoing austerities, giving charity, or pursuing philosophical and fruitive activities. Simply by performing devotional service, he attains all this, and at the end, he reaches the supreme eternal abode. Any confusion? So straight. Whatever benefit one gets even studying the Vedas, which we are not doing anyway, so we don't have to worry too much. Performing sacrifices, maybe people may be doing some sacrifice of getting up when somebody is coming, old person is coming in the tram or train, maybe getting up, some sacrifice. Or maybe throwing a dollar or two on Sunset Street while walking. These are the kind of sacrifices people are performing now. Or giving something in charity, right? You know, Red Cross, salvos, or this or that, some charity, old clothes.
Okay.
This is the maximum charity people are doing. or giving away some money. So whatever benefit, don't get carried away by this kind of small things. I went as a devotee to my hometown and I met with a few people. Then one person was asking me, what kind of charities do you do? Say, this spiritual group, they distribute so much of food. These people, they distribute so much of shelter. These people distribute so much of money, millions of dollars. So, what is your social service? What is your social service? And if you are not in proper understanding, one can get a little bit agitated. People are facing problems. They are lacking food. People are lacking education. People are lacking money. People are lacking shelter. People are lacking clothes. The issues are there, and we don't deny those issues. And people are asking on your face, what are you doing for these problems? And realistically speaking, we are doing nothing. If we consider, compared to many other organizations, we are not in a position even to distribute prasadam to such a grand scale. So forget about clothes or shelter or job or money or whatever. We need money rather. We are not in a position to donate money rather. We need money. So when somebody asks this question, one can get really bewildered. If one is not, especially somebody in the beginning or neophyte stage of Krishna consciousness, not in the right knowledge, then one could get easily bewildered by this question. Is it right? What am I doing? What are we doing for all these kind of things? So Krishna says, don't worry. You do devotional service. It's not that if we have enough facilities, we don't mind sharing, but we know the condition. We don't have so much actually. Even for food distribution, we are quite limited. So Krishna says, whatever benefit people get by doing any of these kind of activities, the same result we get by performing devotional service, and on top of that, what we get, that they don't get, we only get. What is that? We can go back home, back to Godhead. So isn't it Bhagavad Gita so clear? As who asked this question? Is it so clear? Krithavar Prabhu, you asked, or who asked this question? Other people, or Mithil Prabhu, you asked this question?
You asked.
Yeah. Other yogis, why don't they read this and they don't understand? So see this, it is so evident. It is like, you know, you cannot cover this knowledge, right? So clear.
In terms of being traditional, this food for life and all, there is in India quite a few plants.
Yeah. Yeah.
Lots of thousands of children getting fed.
Yes, that's right.
Free of cost.
Yeah, that's right. Food for life to some degree, yeah. It is there. That is the only thing we can say. In terms of these kind of charities, that's the only thing we can say we have.
It's
prasadam, yes. Yeah. But still, it is food as well. It can fill the tummy and give the energy and nourishment. So, it is superior than food. But at least the food shortage is solved to some degree by that.
And also there is in our current position, but when we have enough resources,
we should be able to do more, for sure. If he has the resources, he can do prasadam distribution much more. At the same time, when we have the limited manpower, we don't do only prasadam distribution. We had to do preaching also. Because that is a charity of knowledge, which is considered even superior. Charity of holy name, it is considered superior. So we had to do this kind of charity also. Because we can only give these things. Right? The Harinam and knowledge about Krishna, who can give? We can only give. Who else can? No one can give. No one else can give other than devotees. So, that is the highest order of charity. We don't deny the other levels of charity, but at the same time, our focus is superior charity or the supermost charity. That is our focus. And this purport nicely presents, I'll read the purport. The verse is summation of the 7th and 8th chapters, which particularly deal with Krishna consciousness and devotional service. Look, this verse is a summation of 7th and 8th chapters. So, in this verse, Krishna guarantees what a devotee can achieve. That is going back home, back to Godhead, while deriving whatever benefit one could derive by other processes, like charity or philosophical speculation, fruitive activities, whatever. and I'm moving towards that purport, not the whole purport I'm reading. The word idam viditva indicates that one should understand the instructions given by Sri Krishna in this chapter and the 7th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. One should try to understand these chapters not by scholarship or mental speculation, but by hearing them in association with devotees. Chapters 7 through 12 are the essence of Bhagavad Gita. The first 6 and the last 6 chapters are like covering of the middle 6 chapters, which are especially protected by the Lord. If one is fortunate enough to understand Bhagavad Gita, especially these middle 6 chapters in the association of devotees, then his life at once becomes glorified beyond all penances, sacrifices, charities, speculations, etc. For one can achieve all the results of these activities simply by Krishna consciousness. So whatever you are doing now, don't get depressed. It is the most glorious activity. That's what Prabhupada has written here. It's a very glorious activity because we are studying the middle 6 chapters of Bhagavad Gita in the association of devotees. So no problem. Any questions?
Is it possible to tell others that, so that others know that devotional service covers all these other pious activities, like, or surpasses?
Yeah.
Without them understand, like, obviously, they need an understanding of what is devotional service and
belief. Sure. That's the reason Srila Prabhupada has always some analogies, some stories to establish this point. You know, everyone knows the story. I can tell you the beginning of the story, then it will be easier. A person, a child with a lost father or a lost child. So what is the best service one could do for that child?
Take
him back to his rich father. So you can feed him, you can give him nice education, you can give him nice shelter, you can give him nice clothes. Still, that will not solve the problem. Unless and until you take him to his father. Then all the problems are naturally solved. So this is the example Prabhupada used to establish this particular point. Any further questions? Yeah.
And then yogi, Jnana yogi, who can control
Ashtanga Yogi, right?
So number of breaths are fixed, but he can go along
by controlling. Yeah, controlling the breath, yeah. That is the process that Srila Prabhupada explains. Yeah, mechanical system of controlling the span of life.
Prabhu, if you want to donate.
Prabhu, is there any recording happening?
Prabhu, actually, a donation, that means in the sense where you can help to the people, only by prasadam or in other ways? Other ways, in the sense, money and all, if you are helped to somebody, then their karmas will come to us.
Yes, so you have to be very careful while donating money. You should know what is he going to do with that money. Otherwise you get the karma.
Only prasadam can distribute.
Yeah, devotees usually give prasadam.
Regarding charity, right? Someone donates responsible and other activities. Is there any difference? Someone donating to our responsible for so many activities what we do, and there are a lot of other activities. You are talking about the Sarva armies, so many things they donate. Is it, I think more of goodness, some charity, is there something. But what kind of benefit do they derive, Prabhu, by donating? Is there any benefit?
what do you think, what benefit do they derive by serving or donating ISKCON?
Since we are using it for Krishna, would they benefit by that?
Then what else?
No, no, benefit means in a sense, do they get any Ajnan Sukrita piety?
Yes, of course. Not just material piety, they get spiritual piety. They get Sukriti, Ajnan Sukriti, which is devotion. Definitely. Then, depending on their knowledge, they get more. If somebody is giving with full devotion, the same thing, one sack of rice, one can just drop it and go. I don't care. And one can offer to Krishna with devotion. Same thing, but the benefit is different according to the mood in which or the devotion by which we are offering it to Krishna. Giving it to sallows, giving it to Red Cross. If you give money and if they serve meat, you get bad karma for that. You may not know. So karma is involved.
Even though if there is a good thing also, that again you have to come back and you have to enjoy that money.
Yeah, if we develop or if we get that those kinds of karma, one has to come back and get all the results back.
That applies to our death as well. A person who is serving with full devotion, Krishna, and the other person who is not serving very very much in devotion. Krishna gives the same reward to both of them. Here he says, you shouldn't worry about what time you're passing away and this and that.
Yeah.
So both the devotees will get same destination.
One will go back home, back to God if he has purified completely. If he's a pure devotee, then he can go back home, back to God.
But if someone is serving, you know, much understanding of Shastra, but he's serving faithfully.
Yeah, we are all making progress. We may fall into that category. We may just serve like that. So, may not be in one lifetime. Can take more lifetimes. Ultimately, one will get purified. Prabhupada
says ISKCON is like a backdoor entry.
Yeah, Prabhupada will come and take, but at the same time one has to put all the endeavor to purify oneself. It's not that, you know, I just chant 16 rounds. Somehow or other I am chanting 16 rounds. Maybe while sleeping, while, you know, dozing and, you know, going here, there, somehow or other 16 rounds. That's not purify, no? Chanting 16 rounds means, Prabhupada himself explains what is the quality of chanting, different kinds of chanting. It's explained in Nectar of Instruction in many places. It is mentioned what are the different kinds of chanting. So, quality of chanting matters. And following four regularity principles. One can follow regularity principles on higher platform. It's not only always on the same level. One has to get purified. Or one has to put full effort to get purified. Then whatever is lacking, Prabhupada can. Pure devotees, Krishna also guarantees he can support us. But if we are not trying our best, then this is not a statement to fall back and, you know, do whatever, you know, minimum I will do and then go back. That's not the statement. That's not the meaning of, you know, chant 16 rounds and follow four regulative principles. One has to work on one's chanting. Otherwise one may not want to go back, come back to God. Prabhupada may come. Still we are saying, no, I don't want to go back, come back to God. I had to do so many things here. If somebody is somehow or other finishing 16 rounds, not very serious, maybe following 4 recs somehow, you know, so minimal, everything minimal, then it means he is very much attached to this world, right? then why should he go back from Bhaktivedanta in this lifetime? Why should he go? He can stay here. He may think, yeah, ISKCON is there, prasadam is not bad. One more lifetime, what's the big deal? Around with the devotees, have another nice time here. So one has to be serious, very serious. One can transcend karma with devotional service, of course.
But then it come and haunts back again. Like, isn't it like, you can't completely do that because his body itself is a karma.
Yeah.
So, how we can understand that we can completely come over karma and won't come back and haunt us in some way or the other in the future?
There are two kinds of karmas, primarily. What are those kind of karmas? Prarabdha and aprarabdha. Prarabdha means? Manifested, or in simple terms, that which is reserved for this body, for the existing, the current body. So by devotional service, immediately the prarabdha karma will not go. Aprarabdha, with that which is not manifested, aprarabdha, kodam, visam, all those kind of things, that can be eradicated straight away. But prarabdha will remain. And Krishna is purifying us through the prarabdha karma. So he uses the prarabdha karma to purify us. For example, our own body. So we are using, by Krishna's mercy, we are using our body to purify ourselves, right? So that is prarabdha karma being used to purify oneself. So we may have karma for diseases or whatever. Krishna uses those things to purify us. So it's not exactly karma, but Krishna uses those prarabdha karma to purify us. So that is the way we are actually using the prarabdha karma to get us free from all these sinful reactions. And then at the end of the body, when we are departing, then one can actually completely relinquish all the prarabdha karmas, including the body, and then go back and back to body. Your point is prarabdha karma, whether it is an entrance to devotional service.
Could there be sometimes prarabdha karma because there are so much of karma
created,
then that is of course going to have a problem. But now once you are in the devotion, trying to serve Krishna, and could this prarabdha karma still be like coming in your way and hindrance to advance spiritually?
No. Prarabdha karma, Krishna uses prarabdha karma to purify us. Purify us. Not to kick us away from devotional service. We may have some karma. Krishna uses that karma. He may not give the whole karma. He will give. He can add and subtract. And he can give what is necessary for your purification. So, prarabdha karma is not a hindrance to devotional service, but Krishna uses that for our advancement. So he gives in the right proportion so that we can get over it.
At Kanishtha level itself, means
if somebody just started chanting or just a bit of chanting, there itself the karmic patterns are changed. For example, if Prabhupada said even someone touches Bhagavad Gita, he will get a human birth. Right. So just touching Bhagavad Gita, one's karmic pattern had a sudden change and a drastic change, including the whole next birth is completely changed. It's no more the same. So even at that point there is a drastic change in karma. But if someone actually starts sadhana bhakti, if one actually starts sadhana bhakti with understanding, at that point actually Krishna is in primary in control. we are trying to practice sadhana bhakti. So Krishna is in control. Krishna has a hand in whatever is happening to us. It's not just karma. Krishna is using karma, but it's not just karma. At the same time, we have to understand, since we are not, Krishna's hand is there, but at the same time, there is a two combination of two things are happening. One is we have our karma, and at the same time, Krishna is also there. So if one is fully surrendered, then everything is fully under Krishna's protection. Everything, whatever activity, everything is fully Krishna's guidance. But since we are not fully surrendered, so it can go a little here and it can be a combination of both. That is one, some part can be karma, just karma. Some part can be Krishna is actually making the arrangement because we are not fully surrendered. But still, overall speaking, everywhere there is Krishna's hand. Because since we are doing sadhana, overall, everywhere there is Krishna's hand. Krishna always takes care of his devotees. The only thing what we don't know when we are going to die, only thing what we can do, at best we can be serious as much as possible. We should try our best, that's all we can do. Can you do anything else? So try our best. If we are actually trying our best, then certainly Krishna will reciprocate accordingly. Even if we try our best, that is not sufficient to take us back home back to Godhead. The rest, whatever is required, is supplied by the mercy of the Lord. So, both are required. So, any questions? It's fine. Okay, moving to the next chapter. The most confidential knowledge. Rajavidya. This chapter is very interesting and very important. Initially, we will go through an overview of this chapter. What are the different themes that have been covered in this chapter 9? In the first section, verses from 1 to 3, it is mentioned what are the qualification and disqualification of a person to approach Krishna or to understand the science of Krishna consciousness. As you will see, one has to be known in VSS mentioned in the verse number 1. Anasuyave, the word Anasuyave means known envious. Similarly, disqualification, how one can't understand Krishna consciousness because Ashwadadana Purushaha, one who is faithless, he becomes in a difficult position, he can't understand. And verses from 4 to 10 of this chapter gives a very interesting and very intricate relationship between Krishna and the material world. This part is very important, it is very interesting, and this part is very difficult to understand from materialistic point of view or also from other traditions of religion. That is verse from 4 to 10. That is the inconceivable relationship between Krishna and the material world. So Krishna is there, the Supreme Lord is there, and all of us. So what is the relation between these two? So that is the next section. Then next section from 11 till 19, the third one, is mentioned the characteristics of worshippers of the Lord and, you know, non-worshippers, non-devotees and devotees pretty much. As it is given in a Mokhasha, Mokha Karmana, Mokha Jnana, Vichetasa, how all the activities and all the endeavors of non-devotees are baffled and they are left with nothing. So that is mentioned. And also how a devotee takes shelter of the internal potency of the Supreme Lord. Mahatmanastu, Maham Partha, Devi, Pragatim, Ashata. So that comparison is given in the third section of this chapter. Then again we are moving into a different section which is dealing with the demigod worship. As you remember, in the 7th chapter dealt very nicely with demigod worship, and the same point is even more confirmed in chapter number 9. So the destination of demigod worshipper and what are the problems or the temporary nature of demigod worship, those things are again stressed in 9th chapter, verses from 20 to
28.
Yeah. And handbook, this divisions are given, so you can have a look. And the last section is glories of directly worshipping Krishna. 27 till 34. So, and this chapter concludes with the verse Manmana Bhavamad Bhakto Madhyaji Mam Namaskuru. So it mentions very clearly, and this verse is again repeated in the 18th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna is telling everyone to become his devotees. Manmana, think of me, Bhava Madhaka, be my devotee. So those things are mentioned in this. So this chapter is very significant, and now we will go through the first part. You can read the verse one purport and you can try to answer this question. Why is it mentioned, this chapter of Bhagavad Gita, as the most confidential knowledge? The most confidential knowledge. Because there are confidential, there is more confidential and most confidential knowledge. So how come such a gradation is there? How come such a hierarchy is presented in terms of knowledge? So, you can read first verse purport and try to answer. By the way, the open book question is, present the main philosophical points of Rajavidya verse with reference to the Sanskrit. So that is verse number 2. Okay. So what is the more confidential? What is confidential knowledge according to verse number 1? So who can say what is confidential knowledge? Confidential knowledge?
Oh, just confidence.
Yeah, just confidential.
Spiritual knowledge. Body and soul.
Yeah. We are not the body. We are the spirit. So that is confidential knowledge. So that's not the most confidential, nor is it more confidential, just confidential knowledge. And we have to understand that itself is really confidential, right? How many people actually know that, even theoretically? So it is confidential. So that is mentioned here, that is presented in the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Now, what is more confidential than that? Unalloyed devotional service. That is most confidential. So what is more confidential?
Bringing enlightenment in Krishna consciousness.
Yeah. Giving. What is that? Yeah, the knowledge related to devotional service as it is presented in chapters 7 and 8. It gives some understanding about Krishna, but it is not fully presenting the unalloyed pure devotional service, which will be covered in which chapter? Chapter number 9.
Yeah.
So that is the most confidential knowledge. And to understand in the verse 2, purport, there is a very interesting statement. That is a confidential part of knowledge, simply knowing that spirit soul is different from his body and that its nature is immutable, indestructible and eternal. But that gives no positive information about the soul. Sometimes people are under the impression that the soul is different from the body, and when the body is finished or one is liberated from the body, the soul remains in a void and becomes impersonal. But actually that is not the fact. How can the soul, which is active, which is so active within the body, be inactive after being liberated from the body? It is always active. If it is eternal, then it is eternally active. And its activities in the spiritual kingdom are the most confidential part of spiritual knowledge. The activities of the spirit soul, therefore, indicates here as constituting the king of all knowledge, the most confidential part of all knowledge. So the soul, when it is entrapped in this body, it is just like if you are put in a sack. If you are covered, say if our leg, both the legs are tied and put it in a sack, there is some kind of race like that. Kids are actually covered till their waist, and the leg is tied and it is in a sack, and they had to jump with however, then they get to, you know, who will win the race. The spirit soul is like that, very limited freedom. And even with that limited freedom, people are very active, right? For sense gratification, such a big endeavor. Even for Olympics, people are ready to jump, people are ready to run, people are ready to dive, people are ready to do anything, or kick a ball around the court. So many things are happening. The people are active, always. So think about a position when the soul is not entrapped in the material body. So how much active it should be. And if we don't mention about those activities, then we are not giving any positive information regarding the activities of the spirit soul. And that positive activity of the spirit soul is its activities in the spiritual kingdom, in Goloka Vrindavan. And that's what we are practicing as devotional service. So that is the most confidential knowledge. Is that clear? Any questions so far?
In that way, as we talk about how the soul is active to counteract the argument of the Buddhists saying that liberation means you become inactive.
Yeah.
So, if we presenting that by itself, saying that the soul is actually even more active in that phase of the way for Mayavada philosophy.
If it is more active?
Like saying that the soul, if it's limited due to the material body.
Yes.
So someone might misinterpret it that when it gets liberation, then it becomes unlimited in its activities.
Unlimited in its activities, okay.
Happen,
so what do you mean by unlimited in its activities?
Because the body is holding it back.
Yeah.
So then you give up the body.
That's right.
And you don't get limited by that body and
yeah.
The soul, right?
Yeah, okay, we're fine. So what is the unlimited activity? Yeah, you said that they could say that there's the unlimited, but what is that unlimited activity?
Okay,
so you know, unlimited activity means we can say the activities in the spiritual world is unlimited. It's forever. It's eternal activity, so there's no limit to it. One can do anything to please Krishna, right? So it's not limited. It's not limited. Here, even materially, if somebody wants to please someone else, it is limited. Right? But to please Krishna, one has all the facilities unlimitedly to please Krishna. So unlimited access for activity. And it is continuing unlimitedly in terms of time, because it is an eternal time factor. So it is there always. So there is nothing is holding back in pleasing Krishna. So that is the most confidential activity. That is the most confidential knowledge. I need it.
Hello, Gita. Can I get it?
So in this question, the open book question, we had to discuss all the main philosophical points of verse number 2 in chapter 9, because that is the Raja Vidya verse. Is it right? Is that the open book assignment?
No, it's 9-4-10.
Hmm?
9-4-10.
Oh, it's 9-4-10.
Yeah.
Oh, it's not 9-2. Oh, very good. So that's more interesting. Yeah. 9-4-10 is reading.
Identify the principles of pure devotion with reference to specific Sanskrit verses from Bhagavad Gita, chapter 9. That is the
first one. There is a personal application.
Okay, so we have two questions, right?
Yes, sir.
Actually, in this section, there are three questions.
9.4-10, one question.
In this question.
Chapter 8 is the overall view of chapter 8.
I'll just check. Okay, there are two questions in this. One is discuss appropriate and inappropriate application. Two questions. Present the main philosophical point of Raja Vidya verse with reference to Sanskrit word and examples from the purport 9.2. So, what you said is not right.
It's not there.
Not there, Prabhu.
The question is not there.
In this? Oh, I have that question. And the next one is, explain Krishna's relationship with the material world with reference to Sanskrit terms and analogies mentioned in Bhagavad Gita 9-4-10.
The first one is personal application.
The first
one is preaching application, and the second one is also preaching application.
Not in there.
No, no, Prabhu. Personal application will be identify the principles of pure devotion service with reference to
Sanskrit. Oh, it's not for you? In your book is not there?
No. And what you have told just now, that is preaching application. And one more also is there. 9.66.
There's question number 6, which is in relation to chapter 8 overall.
That is number 6-8, man. It's number 7.
Yes.
That's today's section.
Today's
section. Explain how a pure devotee passes to the Supreme Lord is guaranteed by devotional service with reference to Krishna's teachings in Bhagavad Gita chapter
8. But now we
have it.
Now we have it.
Yeah, so this one, identify the principles of pure devotion. Okay, so 9.2 is not there specifically. So we'll have a general discussion regarding that. Okay, I will give you the passage everyone can read. Pretty straightforward. Mr. Prabhu done? Sirtava Prabhu done?
Yeah.
Prabhuji is done? Done? Okay, Hari Bhava, sir. Which is okay. what is the basic philosophical point in the first part? Can hear? So we can read the translation of the verse first.
The rest? Okay. This knowledge is king of education, the most sacred of all secrets. It is the purest knowledge, and because it gives the direct perception of the self by realization, it is the perfection of religion. It is everlasting, and it is joyfully performed. So in the first paragraph, saying that it first starts off saying it's the king education, and explains the first point of this confidence to knowledge is that there's a difference between the body and the soul. But in terms of the king of education, the essence of all doctrines and philosophy is that there's no lack of knowledge. There's no more knowledge to learn in terms of if one understands this most confidential knowledge. So he says that the king of all confidential knowledge culminates in the ocean service.
Yeah. So the most confidential knowledge, Rajavidya, is nothing but unalloyed devotional service. Yeah, that is the conclusion.
And then second paragraph talks about how even the highest of material education, such as universities, don't even teach the science of the soul. They have so many departments. There was one point. Yet the soul is the most important part of the body. Without the presence of the soul, the body has no value. So then they will come close. And then the third paragraph is talking about how the activities of the spirit soul in the kingdom of God is the most
confidential knowledge. Is that clear?
Mm-hmm. What was the last one?
The activities of the spirit soul in the kingdom of God is the most confidential.
Did you discuss that point before?
Yeah.
And now, second group.
This one is explaining is how the devotional service will do the post-harm for purifying the sinful reactions. At different stage of sinful reactions, that will be clearing, except the prarabdha karma. Prarabdha and see.
You mentioned that prarabdha will not go away?
No, but except.
Is it written there?
Yeah.
Not mentioned, I am telling you. I mean, remaining three will go from Prabhu. That one is the prarabdha you have told me.
So the devotional service cannot remove the prarabdha karma? Is that the conclusion?
Well, in fact, yes, for those who are engaged in the devotional service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, all sinful reactions, whether fructify in the stock or in the form of seed, gradually vanish.
That is justified through the first paragraph. Like the sinful sins are made, so they have to manifest.
Mm.
They take time from from seeds going to potting and then becoming tree, then flowers and fruits. The whole process has to happen. And those who are fully free from sinful activities, and all sinful activities are ended, and then engage in devotional service. So they are the ones who get free from duty appointed work. So that is put in other words, is that okay, if you are directly engaged in devotional work, even if there are some sinful activities that are performed, whether they are manifested or not, but they will vanish.
Mm. So here the last sentence is, there are sins which are still in the form of a seed.
Yes.
Will it be eradicated by devotional service?
Yes, yes.
And there are others which are already fructified.
Yes.
So, which is already fructified?
Yes.
Prarabdha, which is our body.
Yes.
Will that go away by devotional service?
Yes, gradually.
Yeah, gradually it will go away. It's not true that it will not go away. Prarabdha will also go away. But not straight away, because we need this body. So when we leave the body, prarabdha will go away completely.
Prabhu,
How about the uprar? They also do gradually.
Start.
There will be. It will take time, but aprarabdha will go away as well. Everything is gradually.
Everything gradually only.
But it is faster. Prarabdha is the last to go. That is the reason here there is a verse quoted from Padma Purana. Aprarabdha phalam pavam kudam pecham phalonvakam krameneva. Is that verse there?
Yes.
Aprarabdha phalam pavam kudam pecham phalonvakam krameneva praniyada vishnu bhakti ratatmanaha. So actually this is a sequence given here. This verse actually has a significance. So the sequence in which the different sinful reactions, how they go, in which sequence. So first is aprarabdha. Then papam, kutam. Papam means even the sinful activity in itself will go away. Kutam, which is in the proclivity stage, that will go. Then bijam, the seed of sinful reaction will go away. Then at the end, what will go away? That is phalonmukham. Phalonmukham means prarabdha. So that is the sequence. That is the reason when kramena means in this sequence. Eva certainly. Praliyeta, Praliyeta means it will be destroyed. Vishnu Bhakti Ratatmana, one who is engaged in Krishna Bhakti.
So during this elimination process, where does the inclination fit in? When does that goes away? Before prarabdha and after aprarabdha?
Yeah, first is aprarabdha. Then is this papam. Means one do not perform, if you start performing devotional service, just by the devotional service, some aprarabdha karma will start going away. Then we stop doing papam, we stop doing sinful activity in itself. Then the proclivity will go, because we are stopping our sinful activity. Then slowly the sinful proclivity will go away. As the sinful proclivity reduces, then the seed of sinful desires, that will also reduce. Then ultimately, so that whole cycle is now going down, and finally only this phalonmukham. Phalonmukham means prarabdha karma will go away. So this is the sequence. Vishnu Bhakti Ratatmana, so that is mentioned there. So all this will go away eventually. It's just a matter of time. So everything, prarabdha, prarabdha, kudam, bijam, avidya, everything will go away by devotion. Next group.
Okay, before pure devotee, then aprarabdha will go away. Prarabdha will go away. Pure devotee, before going to a pure devotee, the prarabdha will go away. Then only he is going to be a pure devotee. Am I correct?
Yeah, but prarabdha can be, when for a pure devotee, prarabdha karma can be there. For example, the material, the body. Body can be there. Still it is not considered sinful. Still it is not considered within the modes. You understand that point? A devotee can be completely purified, still he has their body. So there is no problem with that. Is that point clear?
Explain like a chain, but that in bus itself it has complete control.
What is that?
Bus says, who can engage in devotional service? One who is free from all his past sinful activities.
Yes.
And one who is engaged in pious and one who is free from
this. Yes, okay.
So only this person can engage in devotional service. Then it is again reverse. Okay, if you are engaged in devotional service, even if there are some sinful activities,
okay. So we had to understand very clearly. So when it is mentioned that only a person who has actually given up all sinful activities can engage in devotional service.
Right.
So it means that how did we then engage in devotional service? Because we were doing sinful activity. So how did we engage in devotional service? How can we clarify, reconcile that point? You know, there is a contradiction. Apparently there is a contradiction. So how can we resolve that contradiction?
Yeah.
Any
but
idea?
It is like a special mercy.
Yeah, but you know, how can you resolve that contradiction?
There are many levels of devotional service.
Yeah, exactly.
Some people say that devotional service begins at the liberated stage.
Yep.
That's said in devotion.
Yes, Bhagavad Gita as well.
So, whereas then Prabhupada has also said that he refers to often refers to Kali Yoga as devotional service because it leads to devotional service to people.
Mm.
Or like a mango may be unripe, but it's still a mango.
So even though somebody may be engaged in devotional service that's unripe, and therefore in one sense you may not call it devotion, don't say it's devotional service as such because it's not on a liberated platform,
yep.
Still, because it's aiming at devotional service, still called devotional service.
Yes.
So that devotional service where we're trying to become qualified for true devotional service is able to purify one to the point where they can actually engage in devotional service.
Mm. So the point number one, Adrian Bhu mentioned, is there are different gradations of devotional service. So when it is mentioned that one cannot do devotional service when one is engaged in sinful activity, it means one can be engaged in a pure devotional service. One cannot be engaged in pure devotional service while performing sinful activity. So, Tesham Tuntagadam Pavam Jananam Punyagarmanam Dvanda Moha Durmukta Bhajandema Drihavrata. 728, right? 7th chapter we studied this verse. So, Dridhavrata. With the full determination, if one has to be engaged in devotional service, then one has to be free from sinful activities and sinful reactions. So, when we come into devotional service, we may chant some rounds of Hare Krishna, we may help out some serving prasadam, we may clean something. Still, we are engaged in devotional service. That is not pure devotional service. That is not devotional service on a higher platform. That's also devotional service. That one could perform even while engaged in some devotional, some sinful activities. But to perform devotional service on a pure platform, one has to give up sinful activity because both cannot go well together. Both will go ill together. One has to give up sinful activity. So even in the beginning level, even while performing devotional service, sinful activities, if one is engaged in devotional service, then as Prabhu was pointing out, because of that devotion, all the sinful proclivities, sinful activity in itself, that is, aprarabdha first will go away. Aprarabdha karma will start reducing, then phalam, then papam. The sinful activity in itself will go away from us. Then kudam, bijam, phalam, mukham, like that, in that order, reduces everything. And then finally, everything becomes now. Is that clear?
Mm-hmm.
So, to chant Hare Krishna one round or, you know, just to come to temple, it's a devotional service, but one may be engaged in all other sinful activities. He may be drinking, he may be smoking, but he's dropping in the temple also. No problem, it's the beginning. But with that devotional service, his sinful proclivity and other things will reduce. But if one is seriously engaged in devotional service, then gradually everything will go away.
So,
you
were saying that prarabdha, aparabdha, phalam, tapam, kutam, bijam, all this will go away.
Everything will be relinquished by the stankar.
But perfectly engaged in devotional service.
Yes, yes. Just a matter of time.
Not like when coming to temple eating prasadam or like chanting one hour.
Yeah, it will reduce. Aparartha karma will go away. As you said, if somebody is touching a Bhagavad Gita on the street, he is doing a devotional service. So he will not get an animal body in the next life. So his aparartha, that is actually, it's not prarabdha karma, it's aparartha karma, right? So his aparartha straight away changed. Can you see that point? His aparartha straight away changed just by touching Bhagavad Gita. He didn't come to temple, he didn't chant, just touching Bhagavad Gita.
But in what mood? Just touching, but the mood is not
required.
Huh?
No, mood is not
required.
Benefit increases if the mood is good. But
so even if unconscious.
Yeah, yeah. Sure. Eagle the benefit.
Prabhu, aprarabdha is whatever is done in the past.
Sorry?
Aprarabdha karma is whatever is done in the past.
No. Okay. Now we have to come to some basics. Haribod, what is prarabdha karma and what is aprarabdha karma?
Prarabdha means
something that we are already going now at the current state. Already
manifested. Very precisely.
Our body is basically
prarabdha. No, body is prarabdha karma. What is bit more details. What is meant by prarabdha karma?
Suffering at the moment.
Eh?
Sinful reactions for which we are suffering at the moment.
At the moment. How about 10 years later down the line?
In this life.
What if we are looking
at already for us? For this body.
For this body.
That is prarabdha karma. So it can be down the line also. 10 years later also, that is also our prarabdha karma. You cannot say that is a prarabdha. No, that is prarabdha. So, till this body finishes, whatever karma is allocated for this body, including this body, is prarabdha. So, what is a prarabdha?
In the next
body.
Which is not this body. That is the point. A prarabdha means whatever karma reactions we are meant to get from next body onwards. That is Akaradha. Is this clear? So now what's your question?
So will you say that somebody who turns the book, it's Akaradha karma will change?
Exactly.
Someone touches the book. In one sense, like if they haven't touched the book, they may not get the piety, they may be too full of sinful reaction to take up devotional service. But from touching the book or eating prasadam, it can change their current, the modes they're currently suffering from, which is corrupted karma, and therefore relieve them enough.
Yeah, it can be only a starting point.
But it
can trigger.
It can't remove enough of it so that you die, for example.
Yeah.
Removal.
That touching power.
You have no body.
Yeah.
That is why it's the last to go.
Yeah.
Otherwise,
that's right. What is that?
Just by touching the aprarata is gone, then.
It's not the aprarata is gone. There is change to aprarata, that's all. It's not, there is a change to aprarata. Effects, it's not completely gone.
If it is completely gone, you won't get the body in aprarata. If aprarata is completely gone, then you won't get the body. You will go to the future world.
Not necessarily, because you still have your life in front of you. You can do so much of sinful activities in the coming years. So you can create another many bodies with one life.
Now what was going to do that also?
Yeah.
But what was going to do that also going to be in account of the aprarabdha?
And you go to the account, yes.
But anyway, totally aprarabdha will go means you will go into the spiritual world, generally. You won't get the body again.
Yeah.
To go to the spiritual world, you not only have to get rid of this body, you actually have to develop a spiritual body. And it's not exactly the same thing. And that if you want to, even if you get all of your sin removed, unless you're back engaged in devotional service and develop a spiritual body, then okay, Brahman realization maybe, but you won't go to the spiritual world without developing a spiritual body. Just removing simple activity is not enough to go to the spiritual world.
Actually, devotion. But in this context, it makes sense because we are talking about performing devotional service and perfecting, and due to that, the aprarata is gone, different items are gone, so we assume one can go back. That is it. Because it's not by any other means, but just by pure devotional service. Ultimately, everything is removed by pure devotional service. So because of the strength of pure devotional service, one can go.
Yeah,
so
it's
going to
get poor, purifying potential of the devotional service is very strong, and it is called the Pavitram.
Yeah, Pavitram Idamutam. So that is Raja Vidya, Raja Guhyam. We explained why this Raja Vidya, you people explained why this Raja Vidya, and why this Raja Guhyam, how is the most confidential knowledge, and you said it is Pavitram Idam Uttamam. And what is the your group?
Dharmam.
So the highest perfection of religion is the attainment of devotion service. And association with the great acharya, even if the person is not educated, he gets the essence of the knowledge. So simply by association with the great acharya.
So what is the example, what is the story, what is the pastime to establish this point?
Narad Muni's pastime.
What is that?
He is the son of a maid servant.
Is this question, this belongs to you or them? Either of you. Okay.
He is the son of a maid servant.
Mm.
He don't have any education whatsoever.
Mm.
But just, you know, he has associated with saint. His mother was actually serving the saintly people.
Yeah.
So in turn, he was also being engaged in that same service. When his mother was not there, he was serving the saintly persons, and also he was taking their remnants.
Mm.
Because of that, right, all his sin, whatever he has accumulated, everything has been finished. And by being associated with saintly persons for almost 4 months, he was
completely free from all sinful reactions.
Mm.
As he went on eating, he gradually became a pure hearted as a sage.
Mm.
And Narada Muni further says, by associating with the sages, Narada got the taste for hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord.
Mm.
And he developed a great desire for devotional service.
Mm.
So the conclusion what they gave is, if one is engaged simply in the acts of devotional service, everything is revealed to him automatically.
Yeah.
And he can understand this is called pratyaksha, which is directly perceived. One can perceive.
Yeah, pratyaksha avagamam dharmyam. So you are explaining dharmyam. So pratyakshavagamam, what is the meaning? Pratyakshavagamam?
Directly perceiving.
Directly perceived. So here, how Narada directly perceived the results of devotional service?
By being engaged in the service.
By being engaged in the service. So he developed taste for hearing and chanting. This one can actually directly perceive in oneself, right? If engaged in devotional service, one developed taste for chanting. One developed taste for hearing about Krishna. So this is pratyakshavagamam. Just like Narada developed that. By practicing Krishna consciousness, by chanting, one can develop taste for chanting. One can develop taste to hear about Krishna. So this one has to perceive oneself. You know, we cannot just say someone else, what progress am I making? One has to see oneself also. As how much is our material detachment happening and how much are we getting attached to Krishna. One has to look oneself to see, have you got any taste for chanting, hearing, etc. So that is, this is pratyakshavagam. Pratiksha, as mentioned by Narada. And dharmyam, you want to explain anything more, Prabhu?
Dharmyam, after that, there are two more points. Yes. Is the devotional process or devotional service is a happy one, susukham. And one can execute devotional service even in the most poverty stricken condition.
Yes.
There is no material impediment.
Exactly. And which verse is quoted to establish that point even in a poverty stricken condition? One could. Patram Bhushram Phalam Toyam. What does that mean? So is the devotional service too difficult?
No.
So is it susukham? Is it, everyone is enjoying devotional service?
Yes.
Are you enjoying getting up at 4 o'clock?
No.
Is difficult, but then it becomes much easier, and especially, you know, hearing for me, many of the days Mangalarti means I'll be doing RP. It's a nice experience. How is your realization about Mangalarti? Harinam Ananda. Essential, yeah. Duty bound.
Yeah, it's essential. It's not. You want. Because mind takes over when you sleep.
Mm.
So you wake up, you're trying to. You have to get out of the mode of ignorance very quickly.
Mm.
So you need to see the deities. First thing you get up, you need to see the deities and chant as soon as possible. So, that's how I feel.
Yeah, probably.
You are protecting me. Mm. God is protecting you. Or you are asking me, Lord,
Anyone else? Nitin Prabhu? Get rid of the task. Morning itself. The hard task. Morning. Chitra Babu. Anyone else? Any realization? Mangalarti realization? By attending or not attending? Doesn't matter what the open and for that you don't really every day.
Yes, even if we continue 4 days and 1 week, we can see the difference too.
Okay.
Sometimes it goes to teach them.
So it is perceivable, pratikshavagam.
There's a difference.
Anyone else would like to contribute anything? Okay, so it is helpful. And actually, in this Bhakti Shastri course, everyone is supposed to attend few Mangalaratis every week.
Mm-hmm.
That is in, at the last of your back page of your handbook, you can see Mangalarati, Sadhana Chat, etc. Yeah. If you don't remember, then I'm reminding you. So it is part of it. Okay, last section, any 2 points?
Dharma.
Yes, what is the point of Dharma?
The path of religion. The highest goal of all religion is devotional service.
Okay. So it is the highest Dharma. Sarva Pramsham Paro Dharma. Yes, how Bhakti Rasa Akshati. I hate to give a
praise. Same but Sangrut Buddha.
Unceasing.
And it's never ending.
Mm. So?
Devotional service is something very, very saturated, like very juicy.
Yeah.
And for Mangalarati, we also feel a personal connection with Lord when he sings in the morning. It's very, very purifying.
Prabhuji's the last para, and after that we are discussing something which is very important and very interesting. Don't waste time. Don't delay.
It's mentioned that we cannot understand the personality of Godhead just by any other yoga practices like karma, jnana, astanga, or any other practices. Those practices can only bring you to the Brahman realization.
Mm.
And actual devotional service starts after that. Which is after liberation. And only by performing devotional service one can understand the personality of God, because you can only reach by other practices and the impersonal form of the Lord.
Mm.
And then when you do devotional service, Lord reveals and you can understand His personal form.
Mm.
So that is mentioned in this. And the process of devotional service of Krishna consciousness is the king of all education, and it's the king of all comprehension and knowledge, and it is pure and it's joyfully. So this is the conclusion of the whole section. It is performed without difficulty.
Yep. Now, I need someone to write something on this. Whose handwriting is good?
It's okay.
Everyone check. So we are going through verses from 4 till 10, explaining the relationship, inconceivable relationship between Krishna and the material world. So 9.4 is Maya Tatamitam Sarvam Jagat Avyakta Murtina Matstani Sarva Bhutani Na Chaham Teshu Avastitaha. By me, in my unmanifested form, this entire universe is pervaded, and all beings are in me, but I am not in them. One has to understand very carefully this. So there is a bit of confusion in the translation in itself, if you are not very careful. You can write 9.4 and underneath you can write first point. Krishna in his unmanifest form pervades the whole universe. Krishna in his unmanifest form pervades the whole universe. Okay, now, if you try to understand this point, Avyakta Murtina, Krishna is present everywhere on Avyakta Murtina, in an unmanifest form. We have to understand how Krishna is present in unmanifest form everywhere. How he becomes unmanifest.
His energy, right?
Yeah, that is one. But still.
It's not manifest or materialized.
Yeah, that's right. So, for a materialist, Krishna is unmanifest. And for a pure devotee, he is manifest, even in the material creation. So you can write two possibilities. One for here, there is something in that. And Krishna is unmanifest. So one for materialist is unmanifest. And then for a pure devotee, it is fully manifest. Can you see the point? When it is mentioned that he is unmanifest, for a materialist, he is not manifest. If he sees this world, he cannot see Krishna. He can only see Krishna's energy. And he cannot see the connection of the energy to Krishna. If he sees blue sky, he just sees blue sky. He may say, okay, this is made of water, H2O, this is all the scientific process he can describe, but he can't see Krishna in it. Whereas, for a pure devotee, as it is mentioned, prema jana chirda bhakti vilochanena sanda sadaiva hrudeshu vilayogyanti yam shyama sundaram achindya guna swarupam govindam adipurusham tamaham bhajami. Because of pure love, for a devotee, even if he sees the material creation, even if he sees the blue sky or carpet or wherever, he can see Krishna. In other words, he can see connection to Krishna. So these are the two possibilities of unmanifest and how he becomes manifest to a pure devotee. Because of pure love. And how he is actually Maya Tatam, how he is pervaded, how you can write an arrow to pervaded. How is he pervaded?
Pervaded,
yeah. Short arrow, small arrow is enough. Yeah, there you can write, yeah, good. How is he pervaded? Because as it is mentioned, he is pervaded through his energies. Because everything is Krishna's energy. So, in other words, in that sense, Krishna is present everywhere. So here the analogy is given of a king. For example, a king heads a government which is but the manifestation of king's energy. The different governmental departments are nothing but the energies of the king. And each department is resting on the king's power. But still one cannot expect the king to be present in every department personally. That is a crude example. Similarly, all manifestation that we see and everything that exists both in the material world and in the spiritual world are resting on the energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So the example you can mention, the king example, that's right, very important. So just like all, by because of Krishna's king's energy, different departments are functioning. So if there is no king, different ministers and different portfolios may not function appropriately. Because of the strength of the king, the whole system is working. In the same way, since Krishna is there, all his energies are manifest. Now, second point in this verse is Krishna is manifesting so pervert the whole universe. We saw the analogy. And apart from that, one more point, that the whole entire universe is sustained or resting upon Krishna. Everything is in me. Krishna says in the translation itself. That all beings are in me. So the entire universe is resting on Krishna.
That's
the
analogy.
That's not analogy. Okay, now we can see a contrast to this in the next verse. So Krishna says, Nacha Matstani Bhutani Pashyame Yoga Maisharam Bhuta Vrinnabi Bhutasva Mamatma Bhuta Bhavana. He says, everything is 9.5, you can write. Krishna says, what is the contradiction?
Everything doesn't rest
on. Yeah, exactly. So in 9.4 it is mentioned, the entire universe is resting on Krishna. And now in 9.5 Krishna is saying, the entire universe is not resting upon Krishna. So is it clear, the contradiction? Someone has to be very clear about the contradiction. Why such contradictions are present? Because the contradictions are present because we have to understand the spiritual knowledge is beyond material logic and reasoning. And then we can understand the truth on a higher platform. So that which we cannot resolve on the material ground, we can resolve in the spiritual ground. So that we can see here. Entire universe is not resting upon Krishna. So it's the exact contradiction. Yeah. Oh yeah. You were there for that Bhakti Shastri?
Yeah, I didn't finish it.
Ah, okay. And here the example is given. The Lord is not directly concerned with the maintenance and sustenance of the material manifestation. Sometimes we see a picture of Atlas holding a globe. You know, Atlas may be holding a globe. And for Atlas, if he has to hold the whole globe, he will feel some pain. It's a bit difficult. Right? But for Krishna, there's nothing. He's unaffected by. He's unaffected by. Even though he's actually. The entire universe is resting on Krishna, he's unaffected. He's aloof from the whole thing. So he can say the entire universe is not resting upon Krishna. Can you understand how the contradiction could be resolved? Because for Krishna, even though everything is resting upon him, it's not affecting him at all. He's aloof from the whole material creation. So in that sense, one can say, okay, he's not resting upon Krishna. Because he's not feeling any pain. It's not like Olympic weightlifters. You know, with great struggle, you know, we can see the pain on their face. You know, or like somehow they're pushing up and then they drop the whole thing on the floor. So it's not, Krishna is not like that. Krishna is not like that. Krishna is not a problem for Krishna, even though the whole thing is resting upon his energy. And then, therefore, so the planetary systems are floating in the space, and the space is energy of the Lord, but he is different from space. He is differently situated. So Krishna says, Pashyame yoga maishiram, behold my mystic opulence. Now, that purport, next paragraph is very interesting. It's mentioned, his person is full of different potent energies, and his determination is itself actual fact. His determination is actual fact. We have to understand this is a very, very interesting point regarding Krishna. His determination is actual fact. Mm-hmm. Meaning, we may have determination, but we can lack determination. Or our determination can be dwindled in due course of time. However, here in this way, the personality of Godhead is to be understood. We may think of doing something, but there are so many impediments, and sometimes it is not possible to do as we like, most of the time. We may not be able to do what we want to do. But when Krishna wants to do something simply by his willing, everything is performed so perfectly that one cannot imagine how it is being done. The Lord explains this fact. Although he is the maintainer and sustainer of the entire material manifestation, he does not touch this material manifestation. Simply by his supreme will, everything is created, everything is sustained, and everything is maintained, and everything is annihilated. So, what is the connection? Everything is happening, the universe is resting on Krishna by his will, his supreme will. He wants that the whole material creation be sustained, maintained, created and annihilated. So just by his will everything is happening, but he is not directly touching. So entire universe is not again resting on Krishna. You can write the will point. Just by the will, by the supreme will, then resting on Krishna, again an arrow, by his supreme will. By supreme will. Due to the same reason, because it is by the supreme will, he is not touching the material creation, so we can again come to the next point, that then the material creation is not resting upon him, because he is not directly touching it. So then you can write an arrow and write, not touching the material creation. Still he is not touching the material creation. There is no difference between his mind and himself. In that way, he is not touching his touching upon Krishna. Then, we can try the next point. Krishna is aloof from the material creation. Is that logic clear? Any questions? This contradiction, is it resolved? Any problems? Raja Prabhu, sorry.
Here is the first line, and yet everything that is created does not rest in me. Does he mean that?
What is that?
Yet everything that is created does not rest in me.
Yes.
So he may be saying that there is something that I created is with me. Not everything. So everything that is created does not rest in me.
Yes.
But there might be something. But also means that there is something in me and something is out.
And actually understand your point.
I mean, no? Find it, everything that he created does not rest in me. So he created everything.
Yeah.
But not everything is rested in him. That means there might be something that is rested in Krishna.
No, that he's telling, in other words, this we can understand, the entire universe is not, his creation in its entirety is not resting on him. Nothing is resting on him. Here he's telling, everything is resting on him. From this statement we had to understand nothing is resting on him. It's not that something is not coming. So this statement we had to understand nothing is resting on Krishna. And here Krishna is telling everything is resting on Krishna. So it's a 100% contradiction. There's no in between, there's no something. That something issue is not coming. Can you understand the point? So there is a full contradiction is there in that sense. Here Krishna is telling everything is resting on, the whole entire material creation is resting on him. And Krishna is telling here the entire creation is not resting on him. Means even something is not resting on him. Nothing. See, so there is a contradiction. Why this contradiction is there, then we can understand a bit more higher level. That is, Krishna, even though the whole entire universe is resting on him, it is like the entire creation, maintenance and destruction is happening by Krishna's will. It is just Krishna desires, okay, let there be creation, then the creation happens. Then let there be sustenance, then the sustenance happens. Let there be destruction, annihilation happens. But none of the time, Krishna has to do nothing with that. He doesn't have to personally do anything. Okay, creation, now Krishna is thinking, now how will I create, you know, he's just thinking. No, he's not bothered. it will happen automatically because he has his energies which can work on his behalf and he will do the function. He is not doing anything. So that is the thing.
Krishna's will is with him, but the actual duty is performed by his
exactly.
Delegate, like Brahma, for example.
Yeah, for example, exactly. Like that. He is not, exactly, that's the point. So he is not doing anything personally. So still, everything is resting on him because if Krishna doesn't will, then nothing can exist, right? So that means he is not touching the material creation. That is the meaning, Krishna is aloof from material creation. So that means that Krishna is aloof from material creation. Is it right? Mm-hmm. Krishna never touches material creation. Even when he lands in Vrindavan, in material world apparently, he never touches the material world. So he brings his own abode. He brings his own abode. He never touches. There is no time when Krishna touches the material creation. So he never not touches the material creation at any point. So he is always aloof above the material creation. So he can say, yeah, the universe is not resting on me. So it is to understand, to make us understand that Krishna is aloof from the material creation. But at the same time, without Krishna's will, nothing can function. Is that...
But we see the footprints of...
Yeah, we see footprints. Where? On our ground, on the in a marble, or on the... Where? That is Vrindavan. Vrindavan, is it material?
Is it material?
No. Yeah. So material, it's not material. It can look material because of our contaminated eyes.
Yeah. Isn't that the saying, not a blade of grass can move before his will?
Yes.
But his will is emphasized. Both.
That's right, exactly. That's right, the will is emphasized.
But
now, yeah?
Krishna comes in touch with demons. So they,
what is that, Krishna?
Comes in touch with, like, demons or in touch with, like, say people like Duryodhana, they are not like quite spiritual, so then how do we understand that they're still really in touch with me?
Okay, it's a good point. Can anyone answer that question? Say Krishna, which one?
Which
example can we take? Duryodhana, we don't directly fight with Duryodhana.
Bhutana.
So how can we understand? Apparently he touched Bhutana, so.
No.
Is there a different explanation we can think about? Yeah.
I heard the explanation that when Krishna appears, all the other incarnations appear with him, and quite often it's the other incarnations that kill the demons.
Okay. That is one point. That's one point. That is Krishna, along with Krishna, all his plenary expansions are there, so they are actually doing the killing job. That is one way of looking at it. And there is another simpler way of looking at it that can be a bit more contradictory, but that is, for Krishna, nothing is material. For us, there is material and spiritual, but for Krishna, everything is spiritual. There is nothing material for Krishna. These are just different energies of Krishna. They are acting for him, for his pleasure. So nothing can actually touch Krishna. Nothing can actually contaminate Krishna. It can go in two ways. The same incident can be internal and external. For example, even for pure devotees, that's a fact. So I'll give you an example. Recently reading Bhagavatam, in the third canto beginning, say, Vidura was about to leave his kingdom from Hastinapur, right? So, why he left? Insulted by Duryodhana. So it is mentioned, Vidura could see, say, for Duryodhana acted by, influenced completely by external energy of the Lord. He acted by three modes of material nature. But the same incident, for Vidura, he saw the workings of internal energy. And he saw this is the arrangement of the internal energy of the Lord, so I must leave. He didn't have anything to do with Duryodhana. He was not actually bothered about Duryodhana, and he was not bothered about the insult by Duryodhana because he called him Dasi Putra, son of a maid servant. So he didn't actually bother with that. But he saw the internal energy working. Even though Duryodhana is affected by the external energy and he's speaking something, still pure devotee was under the shelter of internal energy of God, and he could see actually the internal energy is making that arrangement.
and electron. Can you see the both things? Okay. Simultaneously present. So it's just for a devotee, the pure devotee. So how about Krishna? No problem. Is that clear? Now there is a very good example given to give us a little bit of understanding. There is an example is given. Understand that as the mighty wind blowing everywhere rests always in the sky, all created beings rest in me. Can anyone explain this analogy? Which chapter did it ask? Which chapter?
Massive cloud cannot know the power of the wind, how it moves. Similarly, a person traveling in time, it does not know the power of time.
No. Explain what we explained with this in terms of this analogy. Besides giving this example to explain this whole thing. So can anyone explain this?
One can feel that wind is
wind doesn't get beyond the sky.
Yeah.
But still, if you imagine everything in there, it's always in the sky. The sky is always appearing. Even though the energy is going on, it's unaffected by what the wind does.
Yeah. Okay. That is the point. The sky is not affected by
the wind.
Similarly, Krishna is aloof from material creation. He is not affected by the material creation. So that is another way of looking at the point, same point, not touching the material creation. Because Krishna is never affected by his material energy. Material energy is affecting us, but Krishna can never be affected by the material energy. So that is another way of saying, not touched by the material energy. So just like there is wind in the sky, similarly, there is a material creation which is sustained by Krishna, but he is aloof from the material creation or unaffected by the material creation. So here again the will of the Lord is mentioned. It is out of fear of the Supreme Lord that the wind is blowing. By the Supreme Order, under the superintendence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the moon, the sun, and the other great planets are moving. You know, then again, it's Chakshudeva. Different examples are given how the whole material creations are working under the will of the Supreme Lord. Is it clear so far?
Yeah.
Yeah. Raja Prabhu, clear?
Yes, Prabhu.
Yeah. If you can understand this, you can understand pretty much. Whatever is written on there, if you understand the logic behind that, then it is pretty much reasonable to understand the example and everything. Nagesh Prabhu, okay. If not, you can ask, no problem. You can explain further. Now, other verses are, if you understand this much, then you can almost, you know, go through the rest of the few verses. Only 4 more verses left for today. That is pretty straightforward. This is part of your open book assignment, or the philosophical point, the connection of Krishna to this material creation. So, it's important. Now, Krishna explains regarding the destruction and creation, his relationship between destruction of the material world and creation of the material world. So, that is 9.7. O son of Kundi, at the end of the millennium, old material manifestation enter into my nature, and at the beginning of another millennium, by my potency, I create them again. Who does this? secondary, but Mahavishnu. Entering and coming back is pretty much Mahavishnu. So this is an explanation. In the previous verse, the will, Krishna's will is explained, and now it is explained how the process of creation and destruction happens by, again, by the will of Krishna. Same similarly in the next verse, that is 8th verse, the whole cosmic order is under me. Under my will, it is automatically manifested again and again, and under my will, it is annihilated at the end. So again, the same point is mentioned. It is by Krishna's will everything is happening, even though he is completely unattached to the whole material creation. So here the three Purushas are explained how the universe in the seed form comes out from the four hosts of Karnodaka, Chaya Vishnu, Mahavishnu. And in each universe, Garbhodaka, Chaya Vishnu enters and it expands, and then from his he fills the universe half with water. And he lies down, and from his navel, Lord Brahma comes, and then Brahma starts the creation. And he further expands, Garbhodaka Chaya Vishnu further expands as Kshirodaka Chaya Vishnu, and he enters each and every living entity, and all the atoms, and within the atoms, everywhere.
So, Garbhodaka Chaya Vishnu creates diversities, right?
What do you mean by diversity?
That's what I read. I don't exactly remember.
What did you understand by diversity? Create diversity means what?
Karmadaksha Vishnu creates the universe and Garbhadaksha Vishnu enters into that universe.
Yes.
He creates different diversities means.
What comes from Garbhadaksha Vishnu? Who comes from Garbhadaksha Vishnu?
Brahma.
Brahma. And then? Within us, the stem of the lotus, the different planetary systems are residing in the stem of
the lotus.
Yeah, lotus. So, there is diversity, of course, because the entire universe is there.
I thought the three modes of material nature.
No, three modes of material nature is very, very basic. It is part of Mahatattva, it's part of Mahatattva, it's much before that. In terms of the creation process. Okay, now Krishna, now one can ask one question. What happened to this annihilation and creation? What happens to the living entities?
They
go dormant state. Where they reside?
In
Mahavishnu, all the living entities, they reside there. And after the creation time, what happens?
They again given their bodies according to their exam.
According to their karma. Yeah, according to their karma, they are given exactly the same body. Whatever they were pending, whatever karma was there, accordingly they get a new body. And they again they start their life. Okay? So one can ask, whether Krishna is affected by any of these karmas, any of these activities. Because by Krishna's will, the whole creation is happening. And in this creation, there is destruction, and you know, it's going on and on. Mm-hmm. So the living entities are doing karma and they are getting its reaction. So whether Krishna is affected by any of these processes of activities, so that is mentioned in the next verse. So Krishna says, Nachamam tam karmani zibatsandi dhananjaya udasinavat asinam. Asakta Teshu Karmasu. O Dhananjaya, all this work cannot bind me. I am ever detached from these material activities, seated as though neutral. So it is very interesting, the term seated as though neutral. And the example is given of a judge. A judge can punish somebody, he can execute, kill somebody, he can reward someone. He can do anything, but still he is neutral. He is killing somebody and he is protecting someone. He is rewarding someone, he is punishing someone. Still, he is considered neutral. In the same way, even though everything is happening under Krishna's will, still he is considered neutral because one is suffering or enjoying one's own activities. That clear? So Krishna is neutral. Udhāpīnavad āsīna sakta teshu karmasu.
I think this point is very important. People say, if God is,
right.
Is killing us, why is he not doing anything
Why is he letting us to go in?
Exactly. That's right. So that's right. He's neutral. He's not bothered.
Yeah, yeah. No, he's bothered, but he's just being neutral.
Yeah.
He has given us our own ichcha to decide what we want to do. So
yes.
Therefore, he doesn't want to interfere in that.
Exactly.
Will, yeah.
Exactly. Our own small free will, he's not interfering with that.
Yeah.
And finally, is that everyone clear so far? Then we are moving to the final verse. Now Krishna explains how he is neutral, how he can actually maintain that neutrality. That is Maya Adhikshena Bhagavad Suyate Sacharacharam Hetanayana Kauntaya Jagat Viparivartate. The material nature, which is one of my energies, is working under my direction, O son of Kunti, producing all moving and non-moving beings. Under its rule, this manifestation is created and annihilated again and again. So Krishna is a father, he is a seed-giving father. So in that sense, he is the cause. We can say that it is by Maya Adhikshena. Because Krishna glances, right? The creation process is Krishna in his Karnavakshaya Vishnu form, in his clearly expansion form, he glances over the material nature. And from there, the whole creation happens. Then there is creation and finally annihilation. The whole cycle starts from triggering point is Krishna looking at, glancing at the material energy. At Pradhan, he looks at Pradhan and from there the creation process starts. Now we had to read this section from this purport. So the Lord is not directly attached to this material creation. The sentence before, all these living entities, although born under the glance of the Supreme Lord, take their different bodies according to their past deeds and desires. Is it clear? Even though Krishna is looking at, and that's the beginning point, the living entities are getting their bodies according to past desires. Now, so the Lord is not directly attached to this material creation. He simply glances over the material nature. Material nature is thus activated and everything is created immediately. Because he glances over material nature, there is undoubtedly activity on the part of the Supreme Lord. But he has nothing to do with the manifestation of the material world directly. This example is given to explain that. That is just like when there is a fragrant flower before someone, the fragrance is touched by the smelling power of the person. Yet the smelling and the flower are detached from one another. If there is a nice rose, we can smell. The fragrance is coming. But the person is completely different from the flower as well as the fragrance that is coming from the flower. In the same way, even though by Lord glance the whole material creation is triggered and then the whole material creation is going forth on and on, still the Lord is independent of the material creation. Just like we get the fragrance from a flower and that flower and we are detached. We have no connection, even though we can smell. In the same way, the Lord is detached from the material creation.
So here flower is compared to material.
Yeah, and the smelling person is the Lord.
So he's aware,
it's not like he's not aware as well. Yeah, he's aware of everything. He's directly and indirectly aware of everything. As Bhagavan says, Anvayat Idharada Shatesha Vijnasarat. He's directly aware of everything and he is indirectly also aware of everything. He is directly aware of everything because he is sitting everywhere as Paramatma. He is indirectly aware because his agencies, as the demigods, they are noting down what's going on. So he knows everything directly and indirectly. So the final sentence is, in summary, material nature without the superintendence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead cannot do anything. Yet the Supreme Personality is detached from all material activities. So that is the conclusion of the section and that for today. Yes.
For this verse, it is also said that Krishna is not different from the energies. So how can we understand this? This we are saying that everything is dependent on
That's the king example. We are seeing the king's power everywhere. In the form of his potencies, in the form of potency of the king, everything is functioning. So we can see the potencies in relation to the king. The same way, when you say about the energy of the Lord, one can see the Lord in the energies. It's like the sun rays and the sun. The sun rays, say if we consider sun rays as the energy of sun, if we get the sun rays, we can say sun is there. If there is no sun, you cannot get the sun rays. So we can say, okay, there is sun is there. We say sun is there. But it is actually the energy is coming. But still, that energy cannot exist without the energetic. In that sense, one can say, okay, the sun is here, sun is up. So it is simultaneously one and different. We had to think a little bit to digest that point. Krishna is present in his energies. At the same time, Krishna is a separate person. This is our philosophy. Even though everything is resting upon Krishna, even though he is pervaded throughout the entire universe, even he is present as Paramatma in everyone's heart, still he is a separate person living in Goloka Vrindavan. Goloka eva nivasati akhilatma bhuta. It mentions that Krishna is, even though he is present everywhere, but still he is living in Goloka Vrindavan.
And he knows everything about
him. He knows everything. Directly and indirectly.
So that person that is being referred in the verse, he is a person who is different, who is distinct from his energies also.
Yeah, he is distinct as well. Yeah, that's right, yeah. Simultaneously both. Simultaneously both. It's distinct as well, yes. It's distinct, but at the same time everything is resting upon him as well. So the energies are coming from him, right? But there is an inconceivable element to it. The examples can give some glimpse to that. But one cannot completely understand, completely conceive. That reason is called achintya. It's inconceivable. How can one act in that way?
Even in the material, in this earth itself, our own energy in the form of money, for example, is distinct from us.
Yes, distinct, yeah.
So what can you say about Krishna?
Mm.
It has to be definitely distinct.
It is distinct.
I can do something with my money, but money and me are different.
And there is no existence of Krishna's energies without Krishna. There is no independent existence of Krishna's energies without Krishna. It can never happen. Yeah, energy cannot come. So. So everyone okay with the concept? So this is a very bit intricate but very thought-provoking section. Interesting, this is the Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva. Simultaneously, this is what we can see here. Simultaneously, Krishna is sustaining everything and at the same time he is not sustaining everything. So, simultaneous presence and absence. So, this is Achintya, it is inconceivable. So, our philosophy is Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva. So, energy and Krishna and his energy, simultaneously they are one and different. Simultaneously they are one and simultaneously they are different as well. They are distinct, at the same time they are same also.
So, Krishna has appeared in Goloka Vrindavan. At the time, he is in Vrindavan, Goloka Vrindavan.
Yeah, he is here, this Goloka, he was in Gokul Vrindavan, that is in the material world, and at the same time he was in Goloka Vrindavan also. So,
for the same pastimes, yeah. Going on here and there is same pastimes or different?
There is difference. Krishna doesn't grow up in Goloka Vrindavan. Here, Krishna is born and he's growing up in Gokul Vrindavan. So that is different. There are so many demons in Gokul Vrindavan, but in Goloka Vrindavan there are no demons as such. So that is different.
So, there are the devotees who develop that loving exchange of Krishna being again 8 or 10 years boy or something, then do they just how do they
Yeah. Still they have the Vatsalyas, so because of their Vatsalya frame, still they see Krishna as a child, in the sense they have the same affection for Krishna when he is in a baby. So they have the same feeling. So, but they cannot exchange exactly in the same way, in the sense when Krishna is in a baby and growing up, that is not present in the spiritual world. So some people say, okay, this Vrindavan is better. Both are spiritual world, basically. Don't think this is a material world, and that is only spiritual. Both are spiritual world. But some acharyas consider this superior because Krishna is growing up, and it's more suitable for Vatsalya Prem.
Mm-hmm.
That is this.
So the same Lord in Goloka and Goloka, same Lord.
Same Lord. Same Krishna. No duplicate Krishna. Simultaneously, yes, yeah, Shyamasundar. Simultaneously present.
Are you really simultaneous? Or, so like if you look at Brahma, for example, his 1 second is all equal to 1,000 years here. So similarly, Krishna's 1 second is all equal to 1,000 of 1 second years of Brahma.
The difference is in terms of Brahma is under the clutches of material time.
Yeah.
So are we. Correct? So we can have this relativistic principle that is okay, that time is, you know, their time is much more than our time. That kind of consideration is possible. But in terms of Krishna, Krishna is existing without the grip of time.
Yeah,
there's no time factor as such. Or in the material sense. So his presence can be simultaneous.
So I was just thinking how the past tense can be eternal, so he can be.
So he's present there, at the same time he can be here, no problem. Even Bhagavatam, there is a past tense, yes. Krishna visiting Bahulashya and what is the other name? Bahulashya. One was a king, one was a poor Brahmana. Shukra. Get that from you. Good name. Bahulashya and Shukadev? Then? Did you get it?
No.
It's in the 11th canto, right?
No, 10th
canto. 10th canto, yeah. Yeah, just get the name then. It's a simple person. Very nice one. Did you get it,
Prabhu?
Who is trying? Only Charan is trying? Okay, Bahulashya and Shrutadev.
Yes.
Not Shrutadev, Shrutadev, yes. So, Krishna wanted to go to Bahulashya's place and Shrutadev's place. One was a king and one is a poor Brahmana. So Krishna, along with his devotees, both expanded into two. One part went to Bahulasya and one part went to Sudadev. And they both received in different ways because according to their capacity, and Krishna accepted both. And Krishna was pleased with both. See, both simultaneously, both no problem. So for Krishna, even mystic yogis can expand themselves into how many times?
Eight.
I am also confused now. They had to do the same thing. So how about Krishna? Krishna can, you know, expand so many times. 16,108. So Krishna was present in each palace, right? 16,108 times Krishna can expand simultaneously in Dwarka. So both Krishna was
different. And different activities.
And they were performing different activities. So what can you do?
So this is one of the eras, no? So many millions of eras. Krishna will be at different
basements. Okay. Thank you very much. So next week, what's the program?